Hollywood definitely has a responsibility to make sure that we know these stories, because Hollywood is also playing a huge part in hiding those stories from us. Hollywood has contributed to the fucked up stories that we've had. You know what I mean? Like, I forget about Step and Fetch It.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Courtney Wills, entertainment director at The Griot.
And I'm your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, social media director at The Griot. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, does Black Hollywood do a good job depicting our history?
Before we get into that, Shauna, what is on your mind right now, girl?
I think for me, it is, you know, just a recent tragedy that happened. Chrissy Teigen and John Legend lost their son, the little baby Jack. And it was a vulnerable and beautiful and so strong for Chrissy to, you know, she shared that with her fans and haters alike, you know, by posting pictures of her and John like cradling this baby. She had been kind of chronicling her very difficult pregnancy over the last few weeks. You know, she was getting blood transfusions, everything just to try and keep Jack in utero and safe. And I saw that, my heart breaks for them. I'm sending up so many prayers for John and Chrissy and of course Luna and Miles. But something that actually really pissed me off was seeing commentary that has come, and I'm talking about people on Twitter, people on Facebook, people on Instagram, in Chrissy's comments, in John's comments, in our comments on The Griot, who were saying things like, you know, well, I just don't understand, like, you lose your newborn and you taking pictures and, you know, this stuff isn't made for social media and blah, blah, blah. And then you had the real sick, vile, disgusting people who were on there, because, you know, that whole Pizzagate crap, you know, and saying, oh, well, this is karma for you, Chrissy and John. Listen, I'm trying to keep it PG, but people are friggin' shitheads on the internet. And I say this as a social media director. There's so many people who are so quick and capable of being just horrible, disgusting, vile human beings from the safety of their telephone screens or their laptop screens. And for me, it's a matter of, first off, let's think about this. When Kobe died, we knew Kobe was dead and Gigi were dead before his wife and Gigi's mother knew because of TMZ. You know what I mean? Kind of like similar to how Chadwick, when Chadwick passed, nobody broke that story but Chadwick's family. So in my mind, in the life of TMZ and over here revealing stories and leaking shit, let Chrissy and John be able to share this and grieve in a way that is authentic to them, that is real to them. First off, nobody gets to tell other people how to grieve such an unimaginable loss at all. That's one. Two, then for you to sit up here and act as though Chrissy Teigen, rich ass Chrissy Teigen and John Legend dealing with something, again, unimaginable, you think that won't help and impact and help other women, other couples who are going through this exact same thing, that won't like help them feel like they have at least a little bit of community, they feel a little bit more seen, you know what I mean? Like, I can't even imagine. And at the very least, Chrissy Teigen, again, has told us about her pregnancy from the start to the finish. Why wouldn't she share this with her fan? And honestly, that might be a, yo, let's try and grab these pictures, put this out here, put it out, just so I don't have to deal with nobody calling me, nobody asking me questions, nobody texting me stuff, nobody, oh, how's the baby, blah, blah, blah. It's a very sensitive subject. So yes, that's what I was thinking of, just how terrible people are and how I really wish that Chrissy Teigen, you know, when she's better, she can tell them all to go F themselves.
I think you touched on, you know, something really important. Of course, yeah, there's always going to be really disgusting people on the internet, but there was so much power in them sharing their story because, you know, like you said, for some, maybe it's unimaginable, but the truth is for so many women, it's quite imaginable. And it's a pain that really doesn't get attention. The idea that miscarriages don't count as children, the idea that we're constantly talking to mothers, talking to parents, talking to me about my living, breathing kids, you know, we never talk about the ones that didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And I think normalizing the pain that comes with that is so important, particularly when we need to continue to shine a light on mental health in our communities. You know, the loss and the grief that comes with a miscarriage is huge. Mm-hmm. And just because you don't always see it, just because there's not a casket and a service, mm-hmm. doesn't make it any less painful and any less impactful to parents, whether they don't have any kids or whether they have 10 kids. I'll never forget talking to the Derricos, that family that has like all of the children, all of the multiples. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to them about the one child that they lost at birth, their heart cracks open, just like they don't have 7,000 other kids at mm-hmm. home. You know, that pain is real. Mm-hmm. And so I really commend Christy and John for leading the conversation in their time of pain. They didn't have to do that. They didn't have to tell us, they didn't have to show us. And they did. And I think, you know, that couple leads the way in several areas of our life. And Chrissy's, you know, doing it for the women and the mothers and the hopeful mothers. And John does it a lot now with politics. He really uses his platform to try and push conversations forward and get his fans to pay attention. And that's a lot about what we're talking about. What's on my mind are so many of these projects that I've been consuming lately that just drive home the point that we have been here before, you know, and it wasn't a long time ago. So many documentaries, so many important films, so many important stories are coming out. And one that I think is so crucial for every single person to take a look at is a documentary called All In, The Fight for Democracy. Stacey Abrams had a huge hand in that project. And through telling her story, she also takes us back to the past, to the inception of the Constitution, and really shows us how this country made huge efforts to suppress the Black vote and to keep us from voting. And the truth is, if we look back at our history, then what's happening now really should come as absolutely no surprise. It does an incredible job of highlighting how Reconstruction, you know, was such a important time for Black folks who, once they had the right to vote, ascended to top government positions so quickly. And then just like that, the knee-jerk reaction from white America is what really gave rise to Jim Crow and to this outpouring of outrageous, horrendous violence against us when we tried to go to the polls. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of compare that to now, I mean, Barack Obama becoming a president was such a huge, huge, huge moment for the country and for our culture. And, you know, it really kind of makes you understand that this volatile environment that we're in now could only be expected after that kind of progress. You know, white America has never, ever wanted Black people to have power, and they have found methodical ways, out in the open ways, institutionalized ways, underhanded secret ways, so many ways to keep us away from those ballots since there was voting. And so it's really important that we learn from that history and that we value our right to vote.
But you know what, Courtney, which is why it grinds my gears. It scuffs my Timbs. I'm telling you right now, like, it puts a crease in my J's. Okay. When I see and hear Black people trying to tell us about, like, you know, your vote don't count anyway. And they already picked an electoral college and da 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 blah, 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 blah. If our vote didn't matter, if our voices didn't matter, they would not be working so damn hard. Let me tell you something, okay? The devil works hard, but the Republicans work hard as shit to try and make sure that Black folks' votes don't count. Like Stacey Abrams, the whole documentary, Stacey Abrams is my Spelman sister. If I were in Georgia, she would have had my vote. They stole that election from that girl. You know what I mean? So go out and vote, y'all. You know what to do.
What you said, for me, what grinds my gears is the fact that that apathy, that giving up, that it doesn't matter anyway, that is the whole point. That is the entire point of the system. So when people say, we need to fix this broken system, it is not broken. It is working exactly how it was supposed to. And that's one of the crucial points that's driven home in All In. And it's also a topic that our friends at Black-ish have taken up. I hope you guys all got to see the episode that dropped a few days ago. It was a special episode ahead of the season premiere of Black-ish. In it, we saw the Johnsons contending with this election. We saw the oldest son figuring out why he was purged from the voter rolls and really kind of taking history lessons with the help of Stacey Abrams, who is a guest on that special that was directed by Matthew Cherry. I hope you guys saw it. I think, you know, it was a different way to tell the same story. And that story is, you're supposed to believe our vote doesn't matter, but it does. So go do it.
Exactly. Stop spitting Hotep bullshit. Yeah.
Another project that just was so important that came out a little earlier this year was Good Trouble. It was the John Lewis documentary, and it hit right before he passed away. Shauna, did you get a chance to see that?
I unfortunately have not. Quarantine has made so many things just overwhelming. There's so much content, right? So
well, that's why I'm here. And that's a good thing. Having too much good content to watch is always a good thing. That's how we know the needle is moving in the right direction. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, take a listen to my conversation with the film's director, Don Porter, who told me all about what it was like to spend that kind of time with that kind of hero. I was saying I'm so glad that John Lewis got the chance to see this film before he passed away.
Yeah, that was really special. He was not diagnosed before we finished the movie. So we had no idea. We completely were done. We were edited, all the rest of it. We had no idea he was even ill. So we finished in November. We found that out in December. In February, there was still some hope that he could fly to Atlanta and do a screening. This was right when COVID was like, got to be careful. There's this thing overseas, but it was a month before shutdown. So, but he was in treatment and not really up to traveling that weekend. So I flew to his house. I flew to DC. I lived in California then. And Valentine's Day, I brought him some chocolate because he's a big sweet tooth. And I just plopped open my laptop and we watched it together, cried a little bit. He just kept saying, "It's so powerful. It's so powerful." And I was like, "Congressman, your life is powerful. That's what's powerful." So, and then we just had a couple hours of just old-fashioned visiting, talking about nothing, everything and nothing. So he gave me these two champagne flutes. They're like really nice crystal with like House of Representatives on them.
Aww.
As like a thank you. And he's like, "This is for toasting when it premieres."
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. The entire documentary, for those who haven't seen it, is such an eye-opening look, not only at this incredible man, this hero that we've had, who's been fighting for our community for such a long time. It's also, I think, in a way, like an indictment on the fact that for all of the work that he did, here we are. And for me, of course, this movie dropped before his death, but it also just illuminates that while we are finding ourselves so much living through things that we've only read in history books, right? You turn on the news and it looks like you're watching footage of 1968. What's missing, at least to me, are the heroes, right? Are the leaders, the people telling us where to go and what to do.
And what to listen to.
Who do we listen to?
I think that you've put your finger on actually one of the biggest differences. I do think, and Mr. Lewis was very clear about this, to not minimize what has happened. In some ways, it's our expectations are greater.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, he was trying to have a hamburger and a Coke in a drugstore and vote. But really, it was really establishing the basic dignities of human life. Can I walk where I want? Can I go to school where I want? Can I live where I want? It's not so easy to deny those basic dignities these days. The pressure point that we're in now is pushing for real power. And I think that the fight has elevated. We are still making sure that enough people have the basic decencies of life. That effort is not finished, sadly, but it's a plus and.
Mm-hmm.
Still getting the basics for more folks because we don't have them, but we're also saying, and we're going to be in some real power too. And so he really straddled both of those efforts. He never forgot that we needed to remember that we could have a Black president, we could have Black multi-billionaires and all the rest of it. That's not enough. That was not John Lewis's mission. His mission is, how do we rise all boats? And particularly for Black and brown people, but for all marginalized people. And he always said that. But I think you're exactly right. And I take nothing from so many people who are out there and are, you know, trying to get their voices heard, but we haven't really coalesced around leadership. Maybe that's because people feel there's danger in that, but I really feel like you, I feel its absence.
I feel its absence. I find myself going, I mean, you know, we're talking right now, it's just days after we learned that Thus far, there are no charges brought against anybody for the death of Breonna Taylor. Another public outcry for justice that feels at least like it's falling on deaf ears. And I find myself when at those critical points in these news cycles going like, okay, now, like, what do I do? You know, what's next?
So it's out now, yes. And it'll be on MSNBC on October 16th, right after Rachel Maddow. And then it'll be streaming everywhere. You know, in that film, I feel like John Lewis and that film speak to each other. John Lewis's message was say something, do something. And Pete in his 60s has become an activist. So he's actually like the legacy of John Lewis's exhortation. After that, there's kind of competing interests. So I'm working on a mental health series with Oprah and Prince Harry for Apple. That will be out in the spring. But I think as filmmakers, it's important to stay fresh. It's important to show up at unexpected places. So I'm kind of looking at a few different things. Unfortunately, we have no shortage of problems in our society.
Right.
But, you know, I'm heartened by the fact that people are enjoying, are listening, are watching. And, you know, I've gotten so much great response from people who, as you say, like, didn't know. And so I'm proud about that. I'm really proud about that.
Well, we are so proud of you and the work that you continue to do. It's so incredible to see a Black woman telling stories that we have to hear and making the impact that you are. So we appreciate you and we are rooting for you and we thank you.
Thank you. And good luck with, is it Parent Teacher Day?
Yeah, pretty every day is Parent Teacher
Day. Every day. All right, thank you so much.
John Lewis loved the movie. It was wonderful. He's so cute. He was only 19. We have to remember that. Like, teenagers are really young now, but 19-year-olds are men.
They edited the hell out that speech.
And white people don't care if we protest peacefully anymore. Now, if they see us, you know, dying in the street with their foot on our neck, like George Floyd, they're going to find a way to blame George Floyd. If they shoot us in the middle of the night when we're asleep in our own motherfucking apartments, they're going to say it's nobody's fault.
I think, you know, so crazy about even like the dialogue that you had with Dawn. And when you really take a moment to think about it, everyone likes to, let me not say everyone, white people like to applaud the efforts of like civil rights activists and things of that nature after the fact. When it's happening, oh no, 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 no. Let's not act like white folks weren't out here condemning, you know, Martin Luther King, weren't out here condemning Malcolm X, weren't out here condemning John Lewis, weren't out here beating John Lewis's ass on bridges. You know what I mean? Like, no, don't try and rewrite history. And we're seeing that even now, like Colin Kaepernick, we all knew what Colin Kaepernick's point was, but now I could see what he was going for and kiss my Black ass. Okay. So, and I'm pretty sure the same exact thing is going to happen to Black Lives Matter, which is a terrorist group to the, you know, the racist white folks, which I'll give it 5 years.
Absolutely. You know, Dawn actually has another project already out, ready for us to consume. And it's fantastic as well. It's called The Way I See It. And it is based on the life and work of Obama's personal photographer, Pete Souza. It debuts for free October 9th on MSNBC. But that, you know, shines a light on one of the few real definable heroes that we've had during this time. And that is Barack Obama. I find myself, you know, after that debaucherous debate, you know, that happened a little while back, I found myself like waiting for Michelle Obama to speak or Barack Obama to tell us what the hell to do. I'm not sure that I want to hear any more advice about going high, but I'll take it because that's a voice that we have. And the fact is, during the civil rights movement, you did have the John Lewis's, you did have the Malcolm X's, you did have the Martin Luther King's, you had the Black Panther Party, you had people organizing. And right now we're getting there. We're kind of getting on the same page, but I don't know, you know, with all of this connectivity, right? We're in better contact with each other than ever. But are we really organizing? Are we really making plans and making demands and defining leaders, you know, the way that they did to make real change in the civil rights? But, you know, civil rights isn't the only part of our history that's important to examine when we're looking for a path forward. I mean, it all starts with slavery, of course, and there have been a ton of projects coming out that depict slavery in really different ways. I think there are right ways and wrong ways to do this. For me, Antebellum was a prime example of the wrong way to do that. It hit me wrong. It hit a lot of other people wrong. I think it attempted to make some really important important points, but watching that kind of brutality for the sake of telling that story wasn't necessarily what I was looking for. But I know, Shauna, that you've got some projects that you've been checking out that kind of did it right.
Somewhat. So I'll jump into one thing. For me, for Antebellum, I struggle with the film because there are parts in which I do like and I get and I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of see where you were going with this, but definitely understand how there will be some people who have an issue with it. In all honesty, when you take a moment back and look at, well, I don't watch slave films in general. I can't do it. Once upon a time, I worked in an office with white people, so it made no sense for me to watch things that were going to upset me, and now I have to be surrounded by white folks. It'll help no one, right? So, but I definitely think that there are certain projects that are out right now that I probably still won't watch, but, but I will tell everyone to support. So I'll give an example. Samuel L. Jackson right now is actually doing his part to shine a light on a little known aspect of our history with his series, Enslaved, the Lost History of Transatlantic Slave Trade. And that's a project that I believe is 6 episodes, and each of the episodes follow separate storylines. The location and investigation of sunken slave ships and a historical analysis of the transatlantic slave trade led by Jackson, author Afua Hirsch, I believe is her name. I want to make sure I'm saying that right. And investigative journalist Simsha Yakubichi. And it's actually really fascinating. Did you get a chance to check that out yet? Or?
I've seen a couple. And, you know, I think that it is so important for stories like this to get distributed really widely. BBC, I think, just picked up that series. They're going to air it in 4 episodes instead of 6. But that just tells us that people are interested in learning, you know, real history. And I think that this idea that slavery was this thing that happened forever ago and it was bad and then we fixed it, it's over, is one of the biggest lies that really helps to extend people's misunderstanding about what this all means and how we got here. So I love seeing projects like that. And, you know, Samuel L. Jackson has such a huge following that I think it's going to grab people that wouldn't necessarily pay attention to something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is one thing that is definitely on my list to watch, but something that I've been watching and loving so much. It's been such a long time since I looked forward to seeing a show the second that it aired, and that is HBO's Lovecraft Country. Oh my God. Like, I don't do gore, but this show is done so beautifully and so masterfully weaves real life bits of history and experiences and makes them feel so now and so real. And also, you know, injects fantasy and freaky, crazy, scary shit that still pales in comparison to the horror of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really the beauty of that show. Hopefully you guys are caught up. I won't spoil it. We just saw episode 8, which I think is the last one for the season. I hope not, but I think it is. Incredible show, Shauna. And this last episode, we really saw them drive home the point that Emmett Till is planted firmly in this storyline to give us a frame of reference between the real horrors and the monsters that they are cooking up. How do you like that show, Shauna?
Well, I actually think it's 10 episodes. I might be wrong, but I'm...
Oh, good.
I believe it's 10. I believe it's 10. And, you know, I've tweeted this multiple times already. Lovecraft Country is a show after my own blurred heart. Oh, my God. So first off, I love horror. I love gore. Literally, I would host a watch party to watch every single Saw movie prior to, and then we're going to go see the new Saw movie at the theater. I'm very, give me all the gore, give me all the stuff. But what I love so much, and honestly, when you take a moment and just realize, like, all HBO said was, yo, let's start giving Black people their things. Look at the dope shit that they've created. You know what I'm saying? Like, we had Watchmen and you're like, oh, yeah, you know, and now we have Lovecraft Country. And what I love about Lovecraft Country, and I got my parents into it. Like, my dad is a huge fan. My mother is like, I don't know what this shit is going on, but it looks great, you know? And there are some things that I'm like, oh, I caught that. Oh, maybe I didn't catch that part. You know, and shout out to another Black Girl Magic podcast, which is Lovecraft Country Radio, which I think is actually sponsored by HBO directly, where they break down some of the themes from every episode. For me, it's been just seeing certain things play out just in real time, and it forces you to go deeper, right? So, like, I'll give you a perfect example. Thinking about the relationship between Atticus and his father, and then you're like, that's a whole discussion. Let's talk about Black abuse in family. You know what I mean? Let's talk about child abuse. Let's talk about physically hitting your kids, where we're born into a culture in which it's like, I'm going to beat your ass because I need to make sure that you have enough respect and I need to prepare you for the world that's out there because the white people are not going to be any kind to you. But then it's like, are you taking away your own child's innocence? Like, I would love to be able to let little black babies have their innocence. You know what I mean? And watching those relationships play out, watching Atticus's father, he is a gay or maybe, I don't know, bisexual man, you know? And it's like, damn, we are not even allowing black men to have the autonomy to figure out their sexuality. You know what I mean? Like, we give women a lot more reprieve. Like, oh, I can be a lesbian today. I can be a lesbian tomorrow. I can be bisexual, blah, blah, blah. No one makes a real big deal about it, right? But if it's a gay black man or a bisexual black man, now all of a sudden, oh, well, he's the, you know, contributing to the feminization of black men. Fuck all that. Look at how happy that man was dancing in that drag queen party, you know? And then you have one of my most favorite episodes. Oh my gosh. Journey or Letty's, you know, she buys that house, has to go bust up them white folks' car windows and such. And you're like, see, that's the type of time I'm on. Bust all that shit up to, what was that? Take it all back. Like, that was so dope. And really, one of the ones that hit so close home for me was the entire story arc about Hippolyta. And you're not in a prison. What is your name? And just saying your name, right? And that scene where she is, I don't know if it's a dream or separate reality, whatever, where she's talking to Uncle George and she says, I shrunk myself for you. How many black women in particular have that exact same narrative, if we're being honest? You know what I'm saying? Just for the sake of a man and a family and et cetera, et cetera. We have dimmed our light so that other people can shine. Bump all that shit. No, we here now. So I'm in love with it. But I'll say this, what do you think? And you know, there are a lot of people who will have different opinions, but is it Black Hollywood's responsibility to properly depict Black history, or is the onus on all of us to do our own research?
I don't think it's about a responsibility. Like you said, you know, look what happened when HBO started giving us our things. What were the stories that we started to tell just naturally, right? Because if you think about it, Lovecraft is not a response to what's happening right now. You know, this movie that's about to come out, The Trial of the Chicago Seven, that I can't wait for everyone to see. It's coming out on Netflix. It's got Yahya Abdul-Mateen II as the real life Black Panther co-founder, Bobby Seals. It's about a real trial that I, an AFAM double major, you know, educated writer who works for the Griot, really never freaking heard this story of this insane trial that makes the O.J. Simpson trial sound like it made so much sense. I mean, the shenanigans that went on as a result of the protests in Chicago in 1968 at the Democratic National Convention were insane. I mean, this man, Bobby Seals, was there in a courtroom for months with no attorney. He was bound and gagged on the orders of the judge in open court. I mean, it was batshit crazy, but you know, through all my education, through all my research, somehow that story slipped through the cracks. Now, here's Hollywood, a legend in Hollywood, Aaron Sorkin, directing that film and telling that story. And he's doing it in a way that now I'm jumping in. I'm doing the research. I'm comparing it to what we're dealing with right now. I want to talk to Bobby Seals next. And it might not have occurred to me to reach out to him now or to look back at what was going on as a result of protests the last time that there were national protests like this. So, you know, sometimes the onus is on us and sometimes Hollywood highlights things that just weren't on our radar for whatever reason. Another prime example of that is Watchmen. You know, it won all of the Emmys, but the opening scene of that one season show put the Tulsa Race Massacre on everybody's radar. And so many people across communities had no idea that that even happened. And I've seen so much more scholarship, so much more information about not only that horrific event, but what led up to it and what happened afterward. I'm just seeing those stories come out now. So I think that what parts of history get to come out really are impacted by what Hollywood is paying attention to. And in a way, it's kind of a miracle that stories like this are being released at a time when we need them most. And there was no foresight to that. You know, they couldn't have known that there would be demonstrations across the nation when they were gearing up for this trial of the Chicago 7 film. But here we are. It's so relevant. It's so important. And that project hits Netflix later this month. Make sure you check it out. It's incredible.
I think for me, low-key, I take Hollywood, who has been the gatekeepers of stories for so long, I take this moment of them opening the door for us to tell these stories in whatever way that we're going to do that, right? Whether it's a biopic, whether it's just like a retelling, whether it's a sci-fi, you know, reimagination. I low-key take all that shit as we don't have reparations, but this is kind of reparations, in my opinion.
A little bit.
And I'll tell you why. It's because as a Black child growing up in this education system in the United States, there are so many stories that have never been told, that have been swept under the rug, you know what I mean? And that have been strategically, you know, either bits and pieces told to us or altogether eradicated from textbooks, you know, just overall retellings from your teachers, et cetera, et cetera. When we were growing up, Columbus discovered America, remember? And it wasn't until like maybe middle school, high school that you're like, wait a damn minute, how the hell can you discover something that people are already at? And in my opinion, it's like, I find it fascinating how white people love to reimagine their histories, right? Tamika Mallory said at a protest not too long ago about, we learned violence from you. That's where we got it from, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it. Don't hide the Tulsa Race Massacre, which, do you know how many people, I'm talking about white, Black, Latino alike, had no idea, had never heard of.
That's what I said. It's insane.
So on the Griot's Instagram recently, I think it was September 29th, we put up a post, a Today in History post about the Elaine, Arkansas massacre. Did you know about that?
Not until I saw the post.
Elaine, Arkansas massacre, where thousands of Black people were killed because white people were upset that Black farmers were trying to get together to figure out how do we, you know, in terms of sharecropping, how do we make sure that our voices are heard? How do we make sure that we're able to grow our business in the right way? You never hear about that. You never hear about, hey, Central Park, I'm here in New York City. Did I ever know that Central Park literally was Seneca Village? It was a village of Black people who the city of New York chased them away to build that friggin' Murderville-ass park. The same park that you wanted to sit up here and accuse five little Black and Latino boys of raping a white woman. Are you shitting me? So no, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, we're going to make sure that these stories are being told in Hollywood. And yes, Hollywood definitely has a responsibility to make sure that we know these stories, because Hollywood is also playing a huge part in hiding those stories from us. Hollywood has contributed to the fucked up stories that we've had. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't forget about Step and Fetch It. Okay. Didn't forget about it at all. Like, Hollywood has contributed directly to those things. So if this is Hollywood's way of repairing those relationships and fixing all that and galvanizing those of us, because the fact of the matter is you don't know what you don't know. I don't know what to go looking for. I'm not about to go Google how many race massacres happened in the United States. No, tell me where it happened. Tell me what the date was so I can read up on it and then do my own research.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm here for it. I'm with it. I think that there is so many pieces of content that we should all be consuming right now, whether it's documentaries or films. There's just a ton out there and there is a lot more coming. So we will keep bringing it to your attention. But I think the overarching theme of all of them is that we never got anywhere from being silent. And right now, you know, the biggest way we can raise our voices is to get out there and vote.
Court, I think we can definitely agree that Black Hollywood has had a constant hand in documenting history of Black culture throughout the years. Whether each picture has missed the mark or been 100% accurate, I think the onus is on all of us to preserve Black history. But, you know, yeah, Hollywood got to pay what they owe.
We want to remind our listeners to support your local Black businesses and donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The business that we will highlight this week is Silver and Riley. Timeless luxury goods cut from the best quality leather available, designed by Nigerian accessories designer Lola Banjo. The Griot has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's G-R-I-O.com.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts and share it with everyone you know.
Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcasts@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusi and co-produced by Sunju Sasan, Kyrie William, and Kevin Y. Brown.